taxes, retirement, and other insurance concepts. Third-party ownership, when the insured and the policy owner are different people, such as a parent being the owner, a child being the insured under the policy, a key person policy. Group life insurance is third-party ownership. With group life insurance, with it being third-party ownership, the employer is the policyholder. The employer gets the master policy. Employees do not own their plan, so they do not get a policy. What employees do get are certificates of insurance. With group life insurance, evidence of insurability is usually not required of plan participants as long as they do it during the open enrollment period. The cost of coverage is based on the average age of the group and the ratio of men to women in the group. The type of life insurance you get in group life is always annually renewable term insurance. There is a conversion privilege with your group life. If you would like to convert your group life insurance to an individual life insurance policy, you have a conversion privilege. It is 31 days that you can convert from group to individual without proof of insurability. You would convert to a permanent policy like a whole life policy. You cannot convert from group term insurance to an individual term policy. It must be a permanent policy, and you will be paying all of the premiums on that policy. A lot of times we need to know who pays the premiums on our group plans. Some terminology to be familiar with is it a contributory plan? A contributory plan means that if I am the employee, I participate in paying part of the premiums on that plan. In a contributory plan, 75% participation is required from plan participants. However, if it is a non-contributory plan, that means I as employee, do not pay any of the premiums. The employer pays all of the premiums. 100% participation is required from all employees. This helps prevent adverse selection. Let's look at some different retirement plans. First, we want to talk about qualified retirement plans. They are called qualified retirement plans because they qualify for preferential tax treatment. Some things with qualified plans: they must have IRS approval, they must have a vesting requirement, they must be designed for the exclusive benefit of the employees and their beneficiaries, they must not favor highly paid employees, and then contributions in qualified plans grow tax deferred. If you will be leaving your employer and you would like to take your qualified plan with you, you can do a direct rollover from one qualified retirement plan to another qualified retirement plan, or from one plan trustee to another plan trustee, and there is no penalty for doing a direct rollover. However, if you take a direct distribution from your qualified plan, where you get a check in your grubby little hand, they will withhold 20% right off the top for taxes. Now, you do have 60 days to put that money into a new plan and the 20% would go back in. But just know that if that money touches your hands through a direct distribution, 20% will be withheld. Also, if you are younger than 59 and a half and you take money out of a qualified plan, there is a 10% IRS penalty. Now, let's look at some specific types of qualified plans and things you need to know about each one. There are individual retirement accounts, or IRAs. Anyone with earned income can contribute to IRAs. For testing purposes, you need to know that IRAs have a very low contribution limit to them. You don't need to know the dollar amount, just know they have a low contribution limit. And then the contributions into an IRA may be tax deductible if you do it just as an individual IRA, or it could be pre-tax dollars if it's done through your employer. There are Roth IRAs. A Roth IRA is funded with after-tax dollars. I like to call it my sock drawer money, money I got hiding in my sock drawer at home from my wife, my kids, and my dog, so they don't spend it all. So you fund a Roth IRA. There are certain amounts that can go into a Roth IRA. Once again, you don't need to know those amounts. What you do need to know about a Roth IRA is that it grows tax-free as long as the plan has been open for 5 years. Next, there is a Simplified Employee Pension, a SEP. A SEP is a type of qualified plan suitable for small employers, so not large corporations here, but small employers. It'll be funded with pre-tax dollars. The next thing you need to know about a SEP is that it has a very high contribution limit. You don't need to know the dollar amount, but know a SEP has a high limit because a minute ago I said an IRA has a low limit. Next, we have a KEO plan, also called an HR-10. This is a type of qualified plan for self-employed partners and their employees. A KEO plan, pre-tax dollars. Self-employed partners can usually contribute up to a certain amount in there. And if they're going to have a KEO plan and they have any full-time employees, and a full-time employee in this instance is any employee that's worked over 1,000 hours in the last year, is considered full-time. That full-time employee must be included in the KEO plan, and the employer must contribute the same percentage to the employee's plan as they do to their own plan. Next, we have a tax-sheltered annuity, or a TSA. There's 403Bs. A 403B is a type of tax-sheltered annuity. And it is suitable for employees of public school systems. So 403B, think employees of public school systems. And also to certain nonprofits and religious organizations under the 501c3 designation. And the last type of qualified plan we have is a 401k, which most people have heard of. That is a retirement plan for larger corporations that they can open up. And it can be funded with pre-tax dollars. And also there can be employer contributions. Remember, there is a vesting requirement for all of these qualified plans. So before you take the employer's portion of the contribution, you have to be employed for so many years before you can take that matching portion. Next, we have life insurance needs analysis and suitability. First, some personal uses of life insurance. Life insurance can be used for what's called survivor protection. So be familiar with the term survivor protection. When you go out and sell life insurance, you're helping a family plan for survivor protection. A couple different ways you can go about finding out how much life insurance a family needs. First, there is the capital needs approach. The capital needs approach is the immediate needs if the insured were to die tomorrow. So it's really kind of the short term. What would the family need to just pay off all of their current debt if the insured were to die tomorrow? That's the capital needs approach. Then you have the human life value approach. That is really the big picture. It covers the immediate needs as well as how many more years is the insured expected to live? This is where you can get like 10 times your base salary as far as the amount of insurance that a family might need. Obviously, this is a much larger amount of insurance than just the capital needs approach would require. Another personal use of life insurance is for cash accumulation. That would be in your permanent policies that can build cash value. Remember, that cash value is called the living benefit so that you can use it while you're still living. Take out loans and withdrawals from it. Life insurance can be used for estate creation. There is no other legal method whereby an immediate estate can be created at such a small cost. And life insurance can be used for estate conservation so that they don't have to sell off assets to pay federal estate taxes and state inheritance taxes. They can use life insurance for that. So those are some of the personal uses of life insurance. Now let's look at life insurance in a business setting. First would be for a key person policy. Remember, a key person is someone with specialized knowledge, skills, and business contacts. With a key person, the business could take out a life insurance policy on their key person. What you need to know is the business pays the premiums on that policy, and those premiums are not deductible as a business expense. Because if the key person dies, it's the business that would get that death benefit. And we know that a death benefit is always received tax-free as long as it's taken in a lump sum. So you need to know this. On a key person policy, business pays the premiums and they are not deductible as a business expense because the business is the one that gets the benefit and the benefit's always received tax-free. The next way is a buy-sell agreement. A buy-sell agreement is how is a business going to change hands if one of the owners dies or becomes disabled. It's usually funded with life insurance. And just like with our key person policy, you need to know this. The business pays the premiums, and those premiums are not deductible as a business expense because the business is also the one that gets the benefit, and the benefit would be received tax-free. Some other terminology to be familiar with on a buy-sell agreement is if it is a partnership buy-sell agreement and there are multiple partners, then each partner would buy a policy on the other partner. That's done through what's called a cross-purchase plan. So just be familiar with the term cross-purchase plan and buy-sell agreement. Next, let's talk about Social Security benefits. Social Security was formerly called Old Age Survivors Disability and Health Insurance. Well, they changed it to Social Security after a while. What you need to know is that we all have a status with Social Security, an insured status. So here it is. You are either fully insured, which means you've earned 40 quarters of coverage, equivalent to 10 years of work. So if you've been paying into the Social Security system for at least 10 years, then you are fully insured. Or you are partially insured. Partially insured means you've earned 6 out of the last 13 quarters before you become eligible for any type of Social Security benefits, whether that be retirement, disability, or survivor benefits. So let's talk about Social Security retirement. Once a worker reaches age 65 and they are fully insured, they've got their 40 quarters of coverage, then they are eligible for their full retirement benefits. Now, they are able to draw early at age 62 and get partial retirement benefits, but if they want their full benefits, they need to wait to age 65. Now, the amount of the benefits that a worker would receive is all based on what's called their primary insurance amount, or PIA. Primary insurance amount is the worker's average earnings, age at retirement, any additional earnings they earn after retirement. So be familiar with the PIA, primary insurance amount, because retirement benefits and also disability benefits with Social Security are based on that PIA. Let's talk about Social Security disability. A few things that you need to know right now. Number one, for a worker to get Social Security disability, they must be fully insured, which means they have to have their 40 quarters of coverage. It's also age-based, though, and here are the ages that you need to know. For ages 23 and under, that worker would need 6 credits. For ages 24 to 31, they would need 12 credits. And I give you those numbers so that on your test, if you have a question, John, age 22, gets in a car wreck and becomes a quadriplegic, how many credits does John need to qualify? You would know it's 6. Or John, age 27, gets in a car wreck and becomes a quadriplegic. How many credits does John need to qualify? You would know it's 12. So just know your ages there. Secondly, it is very hard to qualify for Social Security disability. Part of the definition says you must have a disability expected to last 12 months or end in your death. So you really got to be disabled and down and out before you can qualify for Social Security disability. Now, if you do meet the stringent requirements and you do qualify, then there is a 5-month waiting period before those benefits would begin. Lastly here, we have Social Security survivor benefits. A surviving spouse and children may be eligible for a lump sum burial benefit of $255. And a surviving spouse can be paid survivor benefits as long as there are minor children in the home under age 16. They can draw from their deceased spouse's Social Security. However, once the youngest child in the home reaches age 16, then those survivor benefits would stop. Now, they could pick back up again whenever the spouse reaches age 60, but what you need to know is this period of time from when the youngest child reaches 16 until the spouse reaches age 60 is called the Social Security blackout period. Be familiar with that, Social Security blackout period. All right, let's talk about tax treatment of insurance premiums, proceeds, and dividends. So, for individual life insurance, premiums are paid with after-tax dollars and they are not tax deductible because the death benefit will be received tax-free by a beneficiary. And it's tax-free as long as it's taken in a lump sum. If the beneficiary decides to do fixed period, fixed amount, life income, or interest only, then obviously there's interest attached to each payment, and they would pay tax on the interest, but not on the death benefit itself. Also, the death benefit could be taxable to an estate if no beneficiary is alive, or if none is listed on the policy, or if there's been any transfer of ownership of that policy within 3 years prior to the insured's death, then the death benefit could go to the insured's estate and become taxable. Dividends. Dividends are tax-free. Dividends are not guaranteed in any policy, but they're tax-free because they're just considered a return of any premium that the insured had put in from the year before. Policy loans are not taxed. Insurers are allowed to charge interest on outstanding policy loans. And then accelerated benefits. Remember when we can accelerate the payout of the death benefit if the insured gets diagnosed with a terminal illness and death is expected within 2 years? Those benefits are tax-free to the insured, and it does lessen the amount of the death benefit that could be payable to a beneficiary once the insured does die. Group life insurance. Group life insurance premiums paid by an employer are deductible as a business expense in group life insurance. And lastly, in this chapter, a modified endowment contract, the MEC. The MEC applies to cash value policy. So if the permanent policy that can contain cash value gets overfunded, well, it could send off some bells and whistles at the insurance company, and it could become what's called a modified endowment contract or a MEC. I'm going to give you the words that you need for testing purposes because it's word association completely, and then I'll walk you through a test question scenario. You need to know seven pay test. You need to know seven pay whole life contract. You need to know modified endowment contract or MEC. You need to know LIFO, LIFO. It stands for last in, first out. That LIFO, and that's the taxation that would occur, is going to be on any withdrawals or at policy surrender once the policy becomes a MEC. You need to know 10% IRS penalty if younger than 59 and a half. And you need to know the cash value continues to grow on a tax deferred basis. Here's how you might see it on a test. John has a whole life policy. He's been paying $100 a month for his policy and he's been taking out tax-free loans for a while. John decides he wants to take out bigger tax-free loans, so he puts in more money. He triples the amount of money he puts into his policy. This sends off bells and whistles at the insurance company, and so they apply the seven pay test to John's policy. John's policy failed the seven pay test because it developed cash value faster than a seven pay whole life contract. So now, instead of it being a life insurance contract, it becomes a modified endowment contract. Now that it's a MEC, if John decides to withdraw any money or surrender the policy, the way he would get taxed on that is LIFO, last in, first out. They will consider the interest the last piece in, it will be the first piece they take out, and he'll get taxed on that immediately. Also, if John is younger than 59 and a half, there's going to be an IRS 10% penalty. But if John will just leave his cash value alone and leave it in the policy, it continues to grow on a tax deferred basis. That's it for taxation. Thank you very much, and good luck on your test.